From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Politics Hour starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Kojo Nandi. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a contributing writer with City Paper and a columnist with the Current Newspapers. Tom Sherwood, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Later in the broadcast, we'll be joined by Robert White. He's an at-large member of the D.C. Council. He joins us to talk about affordable housing and the Home Purchase Assistance Program and much more. Joining us in studio now is Rose Krasnow. She's a Democrat running for Montgomery County Executive. She recently stepped down as Deputy Director of the Montgomery County Planning Department to run. She's the former three-term mayor of Rockville. Rose Krasnow, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tom Sherwood, I'll start briefly with Northern Virginia, because even though in the last election in Virginia, Democrats picked up quite a few seats, especially in the General Assembly in the House, the fact of the matter is that because a number of those seats were picked up in Northern Virginia, Northern Virginia members of the General Assembly are therefore fairly new to the General Assembly and don't have a great deal of seniority. The people who they replaced had such seniority and presumably therefore more clout in the General Assembly and could deliver more for Northern Virginia. It's a peculiar kind of irony, isn't it?
Well, it seems so, but, you know, this is the American form of government, representative form of government. You know, welcome to the real world, folks. I mean, if, you know, virtually every legislature that I'm aware of is dealt with on seniority, whether you have term limits or rotating chairmanships like they do in the House. The chairman of the county, of the committees, control the flow of legislation. And so it's a real-world thing there in Richmond for you to discover that all your fancy bills about transportation, equal rights, can just go down the tubes with just a few members of the legislature voting. So the Northern Virginians, with all their enthusiasm and what they want to get done, are now running into the reality that you have to get the votes to get something passed.
The political reality. And for 5 hours early this morning, federal workers did not know whether or not they would be going to work because there was, in fact, a brief 5-hour shutdown before this issue was resolved. But nobody seems to have been particularly inconvenienced by this.
Well, you know, they have to spend a great deal of money planning for the shutdowns. Unfortunately, this one occurred overnight. But again, you know, it's the Republicans, you know, first voted for that huge tax cut at the end of last year, and now are doing this special continuing resolution style budget with huge deficits in spending for the military. It's really an extraordinary thing. And in the meanwhile, all the federal workers in this region and the people who depend on the federal government and the people who are private contractors, you know, at least during the middle of the night, this was a very short shutdown, but it just shows you how crazy politics are in the nation's capital right now.
Rose Krasnow, were you hearing from federal workers in Montgomery County about this?
She wasn't up in the middle of the night.
No, I wasn't up in the middle of the night.
She's running for office. She stays awake 24/7.
We do have, obviously, a lot of people who work for the federal government who have been very concerned about the shutdowns.
Indeed. But on to the matter at hand, your candidacy for Montgomery County executive. We're hearing a lot about how the Women's March has inspired first-time female candidates, and it's my understanding it also inspired you to jump back into politics after 13 years in county government.
That is correct. It did have a lot to do with my deciding to get into this race. I did participate in the march last year, along with millions of others. We never got to march. We only got to stand in place, you might say, and listen to a lot of inspiring speakers. And so there were a number of reasons that I decided to get in. But recognizing that our country was in trouble, I decided I at least could try and do something for my county.
All the other candidates at this moment are male candidates, and that played a role for you?
It did. Not so much the male-female thing, but we live in a majority-minority county, and I was very surprised that all the candidates until I got in were not just male, they were all white males.
You were the mayor of Rockville for 3 terms, right?
Correct.
How many years is that total?
That's 6 total because they're 2-year terms.
Okay. And then you've been on the planning board until recently when you decided to run for it. That was a
yes.
Dozen
I
years.
Retired at the end of.
So you're not coming out of retirement. You've been active in the county.
I have. I always said that working at the planning department was just about as political as being mayor was.
Nevertheless, in spite of being the mayor, in spite of being on the planning board for this long, there are several, apparently at least one, prominent person in Montgomery County who doesn't seem to know you. On our show a couple of weeks ago, we had Delegate Bill Frick, another candidate for county executive, when asked about you as an opponent. This is what he had to say.
Yeah, I had never heard her name before she announced as a candidate. I tell you,
I never heard her name before.
No, I hadn't. No, she hadn't been in public life since the turn of the century. So I really had not interacted with her. I've been a member of the legislature for 10 years and had never encountered her.
He said he did not know who you are. What would be your response to candidate Bill Frick?
I would have to say he's been spending too much time in Annapolis. I'm very well known in the county for many reasons and have had people trying to get me to run ever since I stepped down in Rockville. So I was startled that he said he had never heard my name.
It was very dismissive for him to say that, you from the last century. I'm thinking, I know there are a lot of young people in Montgomery County, but there are also, there's an older population, adult population.
This is not 2050, it's 2018.
Right. I know, and it wasn't that long ago, the turn of the century.
It just seems stunning. Has he in any way reached out to you to say that maybe he was misunderstood, he misspoke, that he didn't mean it as dismissively of you as indicated?
Well, I will admit we both participated in a debate last night at Leisure World, and he and I sit next to each other because they
Talking
always place us
century.
Alphabetically. And he did lean over during the debate itself, and he apologized to me for his remarks. But what I thought was so interesting is I am finding almost that people are not taking my candidacy seriously, and I don't know if that's because I am a woman, but that's why I was so startled by his remarks.
What do you mean people are not taking your candidacy seriously, more so than Mr. Frick?
Well, I agree with you that I don't know that Mr. Frick is as well known as he may think he is. There's just a sense that I get, you know, I decided to take public financing and I got in late. So I understand that all those things mean I have some catching up to do. But I just find that I have not been even asked to do some of the endorsement interviews that some of the other candidates have.
This is being the politics hour. How do you overcome something like that? To force your name, obviously on this show, but I mean, there are a lot of people who are just not seriously considering. Does that suggest the power of the other candidates, David Blair, Mark Elwood?
I think it's the
Roger
other
Berliner,
candidates that aren't taking
George
me
Leventhal.
Serious. I think the people are taking me very seriously. I have been thrilled with the reaction I've gotten when people realize I had gotten into the race. People who come up to me and say, you have guts. People who come up to me saying, I'm so excited that we have someone like you in the race. So I'm not as worried about the voters. I just mean some of the people who have been in politics for a long time. While they said I shook up the race, and I believe I did that, then I just got the feeling that they felt I got in late. I've had a few people tell
me. Are you getting money? Are you getting
I am getting money. In fact, we have raised well over $50,000 at this point, which, of course, we will submit to the state for their match, which will put us well close to $300,000. But we are just being very careful because they're very picky at the state, and we want to cross all our T's and dot all our I's before we submit that.
Did this public funding option factor at all into your decision to run, and do you think it will help bring out more candidates in general?
I absolutely do. I am a big fan of public financing for several reasons. While I don't think many candidates would say that they are beholden to someone who gives them big dollars, when you're running a race like the county executive race where you really do need to raise a lot of money and you have to keep going back to the same big contributor over and over again, it's hard not to feel some sense of responsibility toward them afterwards. And I think So I happen to know a lot of people who have been in politics, who have been in the development world. But if you're a candidate who doesn't, you would have no way to raise money, and this does give you a chance to get in.
In case you're just joining us, tut-tut. Our guest is Rose Krasnow. She's a Democrat running for Montgomery County Executive. She recently stepped down as Deputy Director of the Montgomery County Planning Department to run. She's a former three-term mayor of Rockville. Speaking of campaign financing, reports show that County Council Member Roger Berliner has raised close to $500,000 in campaign cash, well ahead of you and the other five candidates. How much do you think money will ultimately matter in this race?
I don't think it will make the difference in who wins. I really don't. I mean, I think you have to have enough money to wage a solid campaign. There's so many candidates in this year's race that we all talk about the fact that you're going to open your mailbox and you're going to have 50 pieces of mail. And, you know, the going with them is you have about 7 seconds from the time people take it out of their mailbox to the time they put it in their recycling bin. So that, you know, makes it, you wonder how valuable mailing will be. We'll certainly do some. I do know that some candidates will be able to buy a lot of television time. I do not expect to have enough money to do that, to be very honest. But I think it's the message that counts this time. And I think that people really are looking for a new voice, not a term-limited council member.
Speaking of the message, this is the part that Tom Sherwood likes least. What is your pitch to Montgomery County voters?
It's to politics elect, hour, not to the elect, public policy
to
hour.
Elect you Montgomery County executive.
Well, I am
in
running...
In 10 words or less, no.
I'm running strongly on the need to really step up our economic development efforts, because I think our county is at a difficult time in its history, to be very honest. The demographics have changed, and I don't just mean that we have a lot more ethnic groups there. Our economic basis has changed a lot. And we are a county that has prided itself on just having the best parks, the best schools, the best services for those in need. But if we don't step up our economic development efforts, we are not going to be able to continue to provide that high level of service. And we have been unfriendly to business in our county. And I have talked to many people who say they just don't like doing business in Montgomery County anymore, and I really want to change that.
Well, some of your opponents, some of the Citizens Coalition of Bethesda area residents maybe would say, look at what the booming Bethesda, look at Westbard and the fighting over the size of that development, that there is, in fact, maybe a lot of development within the inner parts of the county, but maybe not so much out. What would you do differently? What would you, I mean, a blank check for Amazon?
I'm happy to get back to the Amazon thing. I think there are a few things we can do differently. And I've seen a lot of them because of the work I've done at the planning department and as mayor. I mean, when I was mayor of Rockville, I started the Rockville Economic Development Corporation because I didn't think we were doing enough not only to bring new businesses to the city, but to tell the businesses that were there that we actually really appreciate them. And, you know, I have a story that I tell about going to see Aspen Systems, that was actually the biggest private employer in Rockville at the time. And Al Lampert, who was the president, said, "I'm a little surprised you're coming to see me." And I said, "Why is that?" He said, "Well, we're about to move out of Rockville." And none of us knew that at all. And he said, "Well, I need bigger space, and I haven't gotten any help from the city." And we kept Aspen Systems in the city of Rockville, and Al Lampert became very involved in some of the philanthropic things we do in the city. He was head of my Rockville Economic Development Corporation board, and that's what we need to do. We all need to have a part in getting our county where we want it to be, and we need to be reaching out to some of the great minds we have. I think we don't ask developers enough, you know, what things would help them want to build in our county. We don't quite understand. We don't have a real economic development strategy, which we should have in terms of which businesses to attract.
We will be talking about Amazon later, but Tom mentioned Westbard, and that's what Fred in Bethesda would like to talk about. Fred, you're on the air. Put on your headphones, please. Fred, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you. Let me take you off. There we go. Yes, my name is Fred Griffey. Lived in Sumner area of Bethesda for 50 years. And one of the questions I have is, what's your position on the Save Westbard campaign, that the development of the Westwood Shopping Center is a disaster for people who live and use that shopping center? The density is way too high. There'll be 3,000 people living there. All the tenants who work in that shopping center, with the exception of Giant, will lose their jobs. And I want to know, since you were on the planning board, you must have voted in favor of it.
Okay, let me have Rose Krasnow respond, Fred.
Yes, I wasn't on the planning board. I was actually the deputy director at the planning department, but I actually do support the plans to redevelop the Westbard Shopping Center. You know, a huge surface parking lot, which has no economic value at all. And we think that we can create a place, a destination for the people who live in that area to go to. When we do a master plan, it's not like we get the total density that the plans necessarily call for, and usually it takes many years before redevelopment even happens. But the Westbard Shopping Center has truly been something that has been waiting for a new infusion of life and vibrancy, and I think will increase the property values of all the homes around it.
What about the issue of traffic? Some people would say traffic, I would agree, in this region is the worst thing. And it's not necessarily just the size of West Bar, but what will be the access to it? The roads already are overwhelmed. People wonder what's going to happen to their roads if you try to drive through Bethesda. It's extraordinary. How are you going to mix the new development you think the county needs for economic development and the ability to get to any of this?
What's the Rockville Pike traffic reduction plan?
Well, Rockville Pike's traffic has actually decreased over the years from about 91,000 vehicles a day to about 56,000 vehicles a day if you check it out. And that's true even though the conference center was built and we've got an NRC there, et cetera.
But Westbard, excuse me, for the respect the call, Westbard, one of the issues I've read about is just the access, the increase in living and business there, the road system doesn't allow for it.
Well, River Road definitely has various issues. The plan for West Bard actually calls for creating some better connections road-wise, which we'll only get if we actually see redevelopment. You know, we try in this suburban county that we have, as we redevelop places like West Bard, we do try and put in more of a grid street network. We put in sidewalks so that people can get place to place without always having to get in their cars. And like I say, I actually think that because West Bard, I don't think it's going to become a destination. I think it's going to remain pretty much a neighborhood shopping center. But it just means that if you want to go out to eat, you don't have to travel to downtown Bethesda. You will be able to go to West Bard.
Can we go to Amazon?
Yes.
Amazon, no one will officially say the White Flint development. Can you tell us White Flint is the site that Montgomery County has designated?
Well, I can't tell you the site that's been designated, but I can tell you that I think that we are a very strong contender and that I'm very excited about that, and I'm all in for getting Amazon.
And if it were to be a White Flint, that would be all right with you?
It would. I think if you look at the White Flint Master Plan, it was almost designed for something like an Amazon to come in. I mean, it called for a lot of new growth, and that growth was actually supported by the Friends of White Flint, which are a group of citizens who live in the area nearby and who wanted to see what was basically a long mile of strip shopping centers and surface parking lots. They wanted to see it redeveloped and to become more like a downtown Bethesda. And I honestly believe if we could get Amazon, it has the additional advantages of it would attract more millennials to our county. Our seniors are our fastest growing segment of our population, and we don't have even the number of millennials that some of the surrounding jurisdictions have. And if we want to have a future, we need to be attractive to younger people.
Well, does that make you a part of the blank check brigade, even though that statement was walked back? The statement that replaced it said that essentially whatever transportation infrastructure Amazon needs will be fully funded. And people raise questions about exactly how much should a jurisdiction be prepared to give out of its own coffers to attract a business like Amazon. You say you're all in for Amazon.
Well, I am all in, but I was startled with the statement that they would fully fund anything. I don't think that's the case. You know, Amazon is supposed to bring 50,000 jobs over time, not all at once, that pay an average of $100,000. And the package, as I understand it, that's been put together, it's not writing a check at all. I think that's what people don't really understand, is that it actually involves doing some road improvements that we've been trying to get the state to step in and do for a long time. And if the state wants to pay it, that would be wonderful for the county, because these aren't new improvements. These are things we've known that we needed. And from a tax standpoint, we're going from getting zero taxes on some of these properties to saying that instead of charging a dollar for every X dollars of value, we'll charge you 95 cents. And so we're still 95 cents ahead times however many square feet we're talking about. So to me, it would be a real win for the county.
In the past, the Montgomery County school system has been held high by many people as an ideal. Some would say that you're losing ground on the school systems, that the state support has not continued enough, that the teachers' union is frankly too powerful, and that the schools need a radical attention before they maybe get worse, before they get better. What is your thought about the school system as you look to be the county executive of Montgomery County?
Well, I think one of the biggest issues we faced as a school system is just how rapid the growth has been. Part of that growth is actually, I believe, because everyone knows our school system is so good, and so they want to move to Montgomery County so that they can send their kids to those schools. But the growth, the pace of growth, it used to be when I first moved to the county some 37 years ago, they were actually closing schools in my neighborhood because they didn't have enough children at that point to keep them full. We have options of dealing with the schools. The school board actually owns a great deal of land in the county already. They just haven't quite been willing to give it up for uses. You know, we've, at the planning department, we looked at co-location, how you can combine schools and parks. And I, of course, schools are one of the planks of my vision for the county, because I also think we need to do more, both to address, because of the changing demographics, pre-K education so that children enter first grade ready to learn, and more vocational training in our high schools.
Well, let me see if you answer Chuck's question, because Chuck had a question about education. Chuck, did Rhodes Krasnow answer your education question?
Yes, she did. I was at her kickoff luncheon event, which was very impressive. And I wanted to ask Rose, because you've covered the economic development very well in education, if Rose could expound a little bit as well about her feelings about the metro in the area.
That's where we were going ourselves, as a matter of fact.
Oh,
so
great.
Thank you for moving the discussion forward. Metro's issues, they need to be solved before a giant company like Amazon comes here. Things this week seem to be looking better than ever around the region on a dedicated funding for Metro. Lawmakers in Richmond are coming together on a bill there. D.C. will be on board. What about Maryland? And is Amazon providing an incentive to work together towards getting a dedicated fund for Metro?
Well, I certainly think the fact that we made that short list helps. It's shocking to me in a way that we haven't been able to come together sooner, because I think every jurisdiction realizes that Metro is really essential to their future. I remember well when Metro opened up to Rockville, it was great, because then instead of taking all the guests I got from out of town into D.C. to see the sights every time, I was able to give them a map and put them on Metro. And the number of cars that took off the road was so significant. And as a planner, I mean, we have done numerous master plans where the whole idea was to put our density near Metro station so that people didn't have to have their cars. So making sure that we get Metro on sound footing is absolutely essential.
Well, one of the issues is whether or not the state of Maryland will do a dedicated funding for Metro. Where are you on the race for governor? Larry Hogan, the Republican incumbent, is trying to become the first Republican to win re-election in decades. Do you have a candidate for governor in the Democratic primary?
I am not going to say who I am supporting. I will say that the current governor has, I think, done a lot to try and address some of the business-friendly issues that I've had with the state. But at the same time, and I'm pleased that he's come out with a package to make some improvements on I-270 and even 495, because one of the things I've realized from being at the planning department is that we balance all our master plans so that we have a certain amount of growth that goes with a certain amount of infrastructure. The growth moves forward, but we then don't build the infrastructure. So I am a candidate who actually supports getting more roads and transit in
our county. Follow-up to that, Ike Leggett, your current county executive, he has said nice things about Governor Hogan, even though he would like to see him defeated by whoever the Democrat is. Are you in that position?
Well, I think that all of us want the candidate who's going to do the most to help both the state and our county. And I think that Governor Hogan has been an approachable governor. If I'm county executive, I would like to be a very approachable county executive, and I would want to collaborate with whoever is in the State House in Annapolis to move our county forward.
On to Peter in Boyds, Maryland. Peter, you are on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the chance to speak with your guest. Rose, I guess I'm up here in Up County here, and I'm struggling to find a reason why I should support you as a candidate for county executive, given your tenure on the planning commission where, you know, the up-county people have really been hurt by the planning commission over more than a decade of time.
In what way, Peter?
Pardon me?
In what way?
Well, with all the development up here that has not been matched by infrastructure build-out, particularly the roads is a problem, WSSC has been a problem, and the County Planning Commission has rolled over time and time again in the favor of developers building huge communities and thousands of homes without the roads, and the master plan has not.
So what would Rosecrans now have to do to win your support?
I'd like to see an execution of the master plan that was put together 20 years ago and has been totally abandoned.
Rosecrans now.
We should talk, let's just say Boyd's is up above Germantown. It's along the 270 corridor, which is the main corridor for economic development in the county.
Well, it's interesting. We did a master plan reality check recently when I was at the planning department that looked at how actual master plans had developed over 20 years. And in Germantown, what we found was we got everything we were supposed to in terms of roads and parks. And the one thing we didn't get was all the employment that we had hoped for. We got, it was going to be an employment center. We were hoping we could get some people to be doing reverse commutes, going from the lower part of the county to the up county. But that is not actually what happened. I do agree with you, though, that we need to build some of the actual roads. Yes, I am a planner, and I don't think you can build your way out of congestion. But as the caller pointed out, the master plan said these roads would be built, and people who bought homes up there, not necessarily just Boyd's, but Clarksburg, when it was opened up to more development, they were promised both the Corridor Cities Transit Way and the completion of M83, the Mid-County Highway. Neither of those have happened. And because they were on the outskirts of where development really was, it wasn't like they could depend on existing roads to travel. They really were limited. So I actually do support construction of M83.
Nothing that I've heard today suggests that you would be that radically different from the other candidates for county executive who are term limited and are running for county executive in part because they can't run for re-election. What is the effect of the term limit law on the county? It seems to me it's a fruit basket turnover. People are trying to stay in public office when the term limits were, I thought, was to keep people out of public office and making a career of it.
You know, I agree with that totally, actually. To me, and it was definitely one of the reasons I decided to get in, I was surprised that the term limit law passed by such large margins throughout the county. And it did indicate to me that our citizens were frustrated with the leadership they had and that they wanted someone who would bring a different approach. I think what's important to remember is I'm really the only candidate that has both executive experience from serving as mayor of Rockville, but also a tremendous knowledge of the entire county. And I think they want a new voice. I think I can be that new voice. I think I would bring a real different perspective. And I've shown two things I think that people know me for. I'm a real common sense sort of person. I am who I am. I'm not doing this for the title. I'm doing this because I really want to get the county going in the right direction.
Stacy in Bethesda, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I'm a resident of Bethesda and one of many members of the community in Montgomery County, like some of the other callers, concerned about the rapid pace of development in Montgomery County. You said that you're in favor of building the infrastructure to support development approved, but it seems the planning department has been planning projects and not requiring the infrastructure necessary to support it. It seems the planning department caters to developers and is not keeping the interests of the community in mind and approving projects that can't be supported by the existing infrastructure, such as schools and roads.
What's your question, Stacey?
There's a concern about Ms. Krasnow's independence. It seems a number of her contributions were received from land use lawyers, developers, property owners, and it seems but given the timing, and she retired only recently, some of these donations were solicited and received while she was at the planning department. And I'd like to ask Ms. Krasnow, did you recuse yourself from the matters that these donors had before the planning department? And would you be willing to release communications?
Someone's already requested my communications. I have no problem with anyone looking at my communications because, again, I wasn't the planning board. I wasn't the one actually making the decisions. And as I've said, if a couple of things to remember. Our county is actually only growing at about a 1% rate right now. We used to grow at much higher rates, but that has slowed down. But obviously, it's on a bigger base, so people feel it. I am proud of the work I've done at the Planning Department because we need places for people to live. And I think that what concerns me moving forward is that if we don't continue to attract more business to our area, then the tax burden that's going to fall on those as residents is simply going to get higher and higher. So I am looking forward to creating actually a climate in the county where businesses do want to be. And I think at the Planning Department, we worked very hard to, again, concentrate growth near infrastructure like Metro and then keep our residential neighborhoods.
But who is that growth benefiting? We only have about a minute left, but we got an email from Eugene who says the average cost for a studio apartment in Montgomery County is $1,400 per month. What is Montgomery County doing, or what would you do so that low-income individuals can remain in Montgomery County?
It's an excellent question. I think we all know we have an issue with having enough affordable housing for the people who want to live here. We've worked very hard to try and maintain some of our naturally occurring affordable housing, but there's nothing that insists that the people who get those apartments actually are in that lower end of the income spectrum. We have produced more affordable housing units through our moderately priced dwelling unit program than any jurisdiction in the county by far. And nevertheless, I would still want to sit down with some of our developers and find out just what it would take to get them to focus more on
that.
Can
we just very quickly, you said you're taking public financing for this
game,
so you're not taking big checks from developers?
Absolutely not. If you look at my contributions, it's really an amazing range. I have gotten a lot of $5 contributions from people all throughout the county. And yes, I have taken some contributions, never larger than $150, from people who I have worked with in the past who are builders or attorneys. Yes.
Rose Krasnow, she's a Democrat running for Montgomery County Executive. She recently stepped down as Deputy Director of the Montgomery County Planning Development to run. She's the former three-term mayor of Rockville. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Welcome to this century.
Good luck to you.
Sorry.
Our next guest, Robert White, he's an at-large member of the D.C. Council. He's a Democrat. He'll be talking at some length, hopefully, about affordable housing in the city. But before we get to Robert White, Tom Sherwood, President Donald Trump and the Pentagon are planning for a military parade in Washington. You're a former member of the military yourself, but the D.C. Council is saying, not a good idea. Who's going to pay for it? We're the ones who are going to end up footing the bill for it. The federal government won't give us enough money for it. The streets are going to be torn up by tanks running up and down the streets and the like. But can they really stop this from happening?
The city? No. I'd like to say I'm parade free, even though I was in the Navy Reserves for a while. I never think I ever marched in a parade for the military. Although, you know, I grew up though in military world, and we celebrated Armed Forces Day, I've been to a lot of parades, and we have reasons for parades. We have them on Memorial Day and Veterans Day. We've never had a parade to honor the President of the United States so that he or she could stand there and have a boast of our military might. As many people have said, Republicans and others, we don't need a parade to show that we are a powerful military and that it's just unnecessary. So I would love to hear council members' remarks about it, but I just don't
think
it's possible
Robert
it may
White?
Not happen because, you know, the president didn't want transgendered people in the service either, and the military looked at it and changed the policy. I think that the saner heads in the military may say this is a waste of time, and as Eleanor Holmes Norton said, rather than spending probably with the millions of dollars it would take to put on a parade, use that to fund veteran services and education and housing and things like that.
That
and
was
not
the sentiment expressed by most of the callers during our edition of Your Turn yesterday. But Robert White, at-large member of the D.C. Council, is in studio. Are you a part of the Tanks But No Tanks Brigade on the D.C. Council?
I certainly am, but my perspective is a little bit different, which is that D.C. is more vulnerable to the federal government than any other jurisdiction. And so it is not fair for Maryland, Virginia, South Dakota, California, all these folks with home rule and senators to ask us to stop the parade. I need those folks to really step up and let D.C. be the last line of defense for this ridiculous issue.
You know, the city does have rules, and but the streets, and it, would it be if Pennsylvania Avenue, you would have to take down all the bike lane stuff, the traffic light, just as they do for the inauguration every 4 years, but maybe if there's a parade, they can move it over to Constitution Avenue.
Or they could just not do it. You know, in what
you're not on the transportation committee, are you?
I'm not on the transportation committee. But people should not forget that Donald Trump turned a peaceful NFL protest about police brutality against Black Americans into a debate about who did and didn't support our military. And he's going to do the same thing with this parade. And so I encourage people not to fall into that trap.
Great.
D.C. Council earlier this week gave final approval to a measure to authorize publicly financed campaigns, but Mayor Bowser is opposed. She says it'll cost taxpayers too much. Do you know if she plans to veto the measure?
I don't know what she plans to do, but the bill passed unanimously, so I don't know that it would make a lot of sense to veto.
She definitely does not want to fund it. What's the council's plan to fund the public financing initiative?
Well, the council does, of course, have the power of the purse, and so if the mayor doesn't put it in her proposed budget, certainly we can. But it's difficult because what is not in the mayor's proposed budget means that people see you as taking money from one program to put it into another, so it certainly is much more difficult if it's not in her proposed budget.
You could take the money from the mayor's office.
We wouldn't want to do that.
But it's fairly de minimis in a $13, $14 billion budget. You're talking maybe about $5 million. Is that the right?
Discretionary, so yes.
But that's just one of many things that the council's dealing with. The city's in pretty good shape. The mayor's running for, you know, people. I know there are some people who maybe have even talked to you about running for mayor because you could run without giving up your council seat, and you could hold the mayor accountable on homeless issues, the homeless shelter issues around the city, about ethics issues, about the education nightmare that we're experiencing. It started out as people taking advantage of the lottery system in her administration, and now whether or not the school system is in fact graduating from what Mary Che called functional illiterates. I mean, there are a lot of issues. Someone could challenge the mayor. Are you surprised someone is not challenging the mayor, and why aren't you?
I'm always surprised when someone isn't running for something in D.C. I certainly am not running because I just got to the seat that I had. I worked very hard to get there, and it put a lot of strain on my family to get there. So it's just not something that I've considered right now.
You co-introduced a bill this week that would increase the maximum loan amount offered through the district's Home Purchase Assistance Program, HPAP. A headline in Greater Washington says $100,000 or no way. D.C.'s home purchase assistance is not accessible to those who need it most. What would the bill you introduced do, and what would it mean for residents who qualify?
The author of this bill was council member Anita Bonds, and she and I have had a number of discussions about HPAP. What this bill would do is...
Say what HPAP is again.
Kojo had said it,
sounds like
the
something you take in the morning or evening before.
It's the Home Purchase Assistance Program that allowed me to buy my first house in the district when I was making an annual salary of $15,000 in 1977. How times have changed.
Good.
It is one of our best programs, I think, but one of the problems is that it's gotten so expensive to purchase a home in the district that people who still struggle to buy homes didn't qualify under the income limits under HPAP. So this bill would expand the HPAP limits to 120% of the area median income, or AMI. It also would put a backstop so that there's a minimum amount of, I think, $32,000 that someone at the upper income scale could get.
Yeah, under this law, how many more people would be eligible for home assistance than there are now?
We don't know that yet. The bill was just introduced, so we should be able to find that out by the time that we have hearings. But we do know, just from people that we talk to and staff, frankly, in the council building, who make what seem to be healthy salaries but can barely find a place where they can afford the rent, and certainly can't start thinking about buying a house without the HPAP program.
I know one of the staff members for one of the council members, I won't name him now, but you know, he works a full-time job plus all the community stuff he does for his council member, and then he works as a bartender because he can't afford to buy a house and he's trying to save money.
That's a struggle.
People are being priced out of the city, especially the most vulnerable. The HPAP program obviously isn't enough. What needs to be done, and what is the council specifically doing?
Well, there are a few things that need to be done. The most important thing that we have to do is is develop a long-term strategy. We don't have a strategy to stop displacement curb the effects of gentrification. But what we can do in the short term, I've actually introduced a bill that's just a hair from passing, should pass in the next couple of weeks, to create sort of a public-private partnership between private office building owners and the government to turn older, less used office buildings into housing, focusing primarily on affordable and workforce housing. This is a new idea for D.C. I think it's exciting. We know that it works because other buildings in D.C. and across the country have been turned into housing, just not with a focus on affordability.
Who how would that work? Would the city fund some of the cost of renovating these buildings or give tax break? How would that work for the city government to help a private developer or owner of a building turn that into residential?
What my bill did was establish a small but significant task force that can go through all the numbers, crunch the numbers, so that the city knows how much it will cost the city and how much it will cost the building owners to do these conversions.
Oh, this would be an exploration, see how to do it, then do it.
That's right. But the exploration timeline is very short. From the time this bill gets passed and funded to the time we get a final report is just about 6 months.
There is the law, the Intended Assistance Act, but there is a provision that's called DOPA, or I think it is, and
the District acronyms, Opportunity to Purchase
that
Act.
The government itself can purchase not commercial but residential buildings that are not being properly used and save those for. But the city has not done it, to my knowledge.
No, we've never done it. In fact, our proposed regulations just came out in December, and so those are under review now. But after the regulations are finalized, I think you'll see some folks in the council interested in funding that program.
Would that be faster than trying to change commercial buildings, which don't have the plumbing facilities normally for housing? But if you got the city to step up on buying slum properties and turning them into real workforce housing, that would work, seems to be. Right.
I think what works best is
doing
if you
both.
That's right.
Okay.
Speaking of housing, here's John in Southeast Washington. John, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Oh, great. And, Tojo, and I want to comment on the statehood thing, too, because I think that if the president wanted to make us the 51st state, then we might consider this parade idea. But beyond that,
here, here, John.
I think we need to move on. But on the housing front, I mean, I'm excited about the idea of the conversions from commercial to actual residences, because I think that's really an innovative idea. And I just wanted to ask the council member if, in terms of how he feels about the performance of the current chair of the housing committee in the council, as well as if that's a committee he'd consider in the future.
John, I appreciate your question and your excitement about the bill. I would say that I work very well with Anita Bonds, who chairs the Housing Committee.
So you're not seeking to replace her?
I'm not seeking to replace her. I love housing issues.
Do you want her to win? She's up for re-election this year. Are you supporting her?
I'm actually not really involved in any of the elections right now. Very much focused on my policy priorities and recognize I'm still new to the council and need to get policy done. But we work very well together. We meet frequently to talk about housing, HPAP, senior housing, affordable housing generally, and I would say we work very well together.
What do you think about the removal of the director of the Office of Open Government, Director Tracy Hughes? The chair of the board, which removed her, offered an explanation which was rather vague, which implied that, well, she didn't communicate with us enough. But when the head of the Office of Open Government is removed in what appears to the public to be a secret process, a lot of questions have to be raised. What's your view?
I was very startled, Kojo, by what I read in the news. But there was a hearing on that yesterday that overlapped with our education committee hearing, which I sit on with the chancellor. So I haven't gotten to see the hearing yet. But my understanding is that what we are hearing right now is that essentially there are two sides to the story. So I'll be looking to learn the other side.
Well, I listened to it. It was 2 hours. I watched it on cable TV. And Tamika Collier, who is the chairman of the Baker board, gave a halting, like I'm doing now, answer to why was Tracy Hughes dismissed or not renewed. And Tracy Hughes says that she was on this program a couple of days ago, was appointed to a 5-year term to be the open government officer. It's an independent office, although it's under BEGA, the Board of Ethics for budget reasons, and she's summarily told, you're not entitled to a reappointment, but you're going to be not reappointed. And then you find out that the chairman of the Baker Board, the Ethics Board, has been meeting with the mayor's lawyer, and the mayor's office has created a competing office for ethics training. It just seems like there needs to be further discussion rather than just that one meeting yesterday. So you're going to read the record or whatever and get more involved, or see if you're going to get more involved?
I'll watch the hearing, and if I feel that I need to get involved, I certainly will. But my colleague, Charles Allen, is very capable. And so
he spent 2 hours on this specific thing, and to his credit, he invited Tracy Hughes, who was not going to speak. He invited her to give a statement, and she did. It's just that given the ethics issues that have mired the city government in the past, people are wondering why this board, this Baker Board of Elections and Government Accountability, is now mired in its own questions about accountability. And if Tracy Hughes files some complaint about being mistreated, the board itself will have to investigate it. It sounds kind of a mess.
You're among those calling for an independent investigation into the graduation scandal in the district, which was revealed first in a WAMU and NPR investigation into Ballou High School, turned out to be a system-wide issue of passing and promoting students who should not have moved up or graduated. Earlier this week, the D.C. Council Education Committee, of which you were a member, held a hearing on that matter. What happened there? What are the next steps?
Well, at the hearing, I really pushed again, as I have from the day that this story broke, for an independent investigation, because we have seen principals and assistant principals held accountable, but it seems very clear from the evidence that we have that there was instruction from above their heads to pass more students. And so I don't think that we have really reached a point of accountability. We have not had an independent investigation, and all the recommendations lead us to rely more on DCPS, which I think is a misguided step given what we know now.
You said I'm not sure where you said it, that you thought that Ballou High School itself is owed an apology.
I do.
Because it was held up. You're not suggesting that the work that WAMU and National Public Radio, NPR, did exposing the Ballou problems was wrong. It's just that you're saying it's just part of the larger issue.
That's exactly right. And what I encouraged the city to do at the very beginning was to undergo an independent investigation so that Ballou would not be scapegoated, so that it would be clear whether or not Ballou was in this scandal by itself.
Why does it have to be independent? Why can't the David Grosso, the chairman of the committee, you're perfectly capable and emotionally and directly involved in this. I mean, has anyone called Kaya Henderson, the former chancellor of the school system? Antoine Wilson has just been there a year. Has Kaya been called to speak before the committee and say what she knows about this?
Not to my knowledge, but understand that the education committee is not a big enough entity to really undergo an investigation, nor do we have the funding mechanism, to my knowledge, to hire an outside
special investigation. Why not get the money? Have the money appropriate? Didn't we do this with Kathy Patterson when she did a special investigation of the police department in the early 2000s that radically changed how D.C. police treat crowds and demonstrations? And I believe she did that in-house. She had an outside lawyer. I think Mark Toohey may have been the lawyer. Can you not do something like that in-house? Or who would be the independent investigation?
It could possibly be the auditor. I know that they have a bit of work.
They take forever.
The inspector general could
inspector
possibly
general takes forever.
but I do think, I frankly don't care who does the independent investigation, but I think that one should be done so that we go forward with our eyes wide open, and in 5 years we're not coming back to another similar issue and acting surprised.
Create a special commission headed by Tom Sherwood. It'll be over. The investigation will be done in 3 weeks. And it'll be thorough. Believe me, I know this man.
It would be.
Here is Chris in Washington. Chris, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Councilmember White, I appreciate your being a progressive leader in the city. That's why I was surprised that you supported the mayor's $80-plus million tax gift to a group of D.C.'s biggest real estate speculators who have worked with the Office of Planning and gotten permission to build 6,000 new luxury units and 1,000 new luxury hotel rooms in about 20 downtown-sized buildings at the Union Market area. You know, why would you support such a huge tax giveaway to build a segregated, exclusive community like this?
Robert White?
Yeah. I appreciate the question, Chris. The money that you're referring to is our tax increment financing, or TIFs. And if you study our TIFs, they are actually returning significant investment to our city that allows us, one, to create more affordable housing, but also to invest into social services. So these tools work as an investment. Where I do challenge the city, and we really need to challenge the city more, is to ask what we are doing with those investments specifically. So I like targeted investments, but I don't think we are doing enough with the money we receive from those investments.
A minute left.
Oh, I'm getting Twitter accounts saying that council, if it wants to focus on education, why not just create the staff, create the investigation, and do it rather than doing it and take responsibility for it. Jim Graham, I think, did something on DCRA. I mean, seeing these tweets, it seems to me if education is a premier issue, why not just do it?
You have to ask the committee that.
The chairman. Well,
we're going to ask.
Independent, we can be guaranteed an answer in 2 years.
And we would like to see an answer in 6 weeks or less, correct?
And Robert White's not running for mayor. That's the big news of this
session. He is an at-large member
of the
DC
Council. He is learning the job very well, though. When he first came on here, he talked in kind of bland civics kind of cliches.
You just cut me off.
But you did great. You've learned a lot.
Robert White, thank you for joining us. That's it for the Politics Hour today. For all you local political junkies listening, in addition to our Kojo Show podcast, we've also got a Politics Hour podcast with just our shows from Fridays. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. There you can find last week's interview with Maryland U.S. Senate candidate Chelsea Manning. Be sure to check us out on Facebook. We stream our Friday shows with live video, so you get even more access to the public officials in our hot seat. In the meantime, have a great weekend, and thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Nandy.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.